What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of different places on the internet. We're live over on YouTube, The Tube. We're live over on Crowdcast, The Cast. Or we're coming to you later in your podcast feeds on iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you're kind enough to download and listen to the show. We really appreciate it. But very excited about the show tonight, guys. Very excited to hang out with you. I feel like I haven't seen you in a while. We haven't been taping podcasts every day. And you've been working so hard, Justin.
Oh, God. Well, I'm
in
the
mines. It's tough. I haven't seen you guys in like 3 days or something.
It is weird to not see you, to both of you. But not just Alex, but you, Pete, too, the other host.
Oh, thanks.
Now, I'll mention somebody over on YouTube before we actually get into the show here. Jack Rudy says, I'm ready for this beard fight. We were actually talking about this right before we came on. We haven't done this in a while. Have we compared? I mean, we're all stroking them now. But
Don't say that. Don't say that.
Fondling them.
We're fondling them. That's the industry term.
Beard industry.
Alex, your beard looks very like controlled, sort of like. And Pete, yours is a little wilder, a little more like emotional.
Yeah,
I feel like these beards are indicative of our personalities.
Yeah. Yes, yours is looking a little crazed right now.
Honestly. Yeah, looks. Sketch, bro.
Just a little bit.
It's too long. And it's too long and it's too weird, which is who I am also.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Well, listen, we have a couple more amazing beards coming at you down
the show.
And a couple of clean-shaven folks, I believe, as well. We'll see what happens.
Ooh, what
later
a fun
on
reveal.
In the show, we are going to have J.H. Williams III and debut Hayden Blackman, the team behind Image Comics Echolads. But first, let's kick it off with our first guest. He is a friend of the show and the creator of Jason and the Olympians, which is on Kickstarter right now. His name is Shane Berryhill. Shane, welcome to the stream.
Hey.
Hello.
What's up, everybody?
Hello.
Hey. How are you doing? Thank you so much for coming on. Very excited to have you here. While we're rating beards, you have like a light goatee.
A nice goatee.
You know, it's silverback territory. I've got a little feedback going on.
Uh-oh. Oh, did you fix it? Well, that's pretty intense. Tell you what, I'm going to talk for a minute. Do you have any headphones, maybe?
That's a powerful
I shall be.
I think he's traveling. He may be traveling through time.
Possibly. I don't know. If he becomes a baby with a goatee, that'll be something different. Well, we'll try to mitigate this as much as possible. And if you do have headphones, I would definitely suggest trying those out. That might help. But let's talk about Jason the Olympians, which, as mentioned, is live on Kickstarter right now. As of the moment, you have 19 days to go. I'm looking at it right now. You got $2,390, which is nothing to sneeze at. Pledged out of $6,500 goal. So you still have a little ways to go, but you're doing pretty well already. How are you feeling about your Kickstarter, first of all, and then we'll get into the book?
I better go get those headphones, guys.
Tell you what, here's what I'm going to do. You get the headphones. I'm going to talk people through your Kickstarter while we're going here.
Oh, nice.
Oh, this is
We're just going to roll with stuff. We're going to.
Who needs guests? Alex can just impersonate everybody.
Yeah. I'm Shane Berryhill. Check out Jason and the Olympians.
Oh, no, that's terrible.
Yeah, don't do that.
Alex, I started impersonating him, and suddenly it started echoing.
What a badge of honor for your impression.
Yes. So Jason the Olympians, it is a book, as it says here, a crazy fun action-packed space adventure. I believe you're doing it with artist Alex Ogle, as I'm reading here. Matitya Monaco and Maja Opasik are the other members of the team, if I pronounced it correctly. How are we doing over there, Shane? Better?
Let's try it.
There we go.
Beautiful.
There we
okay.
Go.
Well, right. Thank you, all of you, first of all. Thanks for my beard.
Did you give the 10-year-old who you took those headphones from?
Man, I beat my son down. I can grab him really quick. But anyway, I wanted to start off sincerely thanking you guys. You cutting on each other, talking comics, man, it's helped me through the pandemic. And I'm so many other. So thank you from the bottom of my heart.
That's so nice.
Jason, it's great to see you, man.
Yeah, you too, Pete. Pete, we go a little ways back.
That's right. That's right. Back in the day, we would be pitching Marvel stuff. We didn't get anything, but we had great pitches, man. We had some good ideas.
Those guys don't want us. But anyway, we're too cool.
Too cool.
Jason and the Olympians imagined 100 years into the future, the gods of Olympus have been wiped out by the dark alien menace behind the Titan legend. So humanity has escaped on a spacefaring ark, the Starship Olympia. Wow. And it's up to teenage prodigy Jason Mukai and her demigoddess companions to take their giant robot colossi and form an even more giant robot, Talos, the protector of the Starship Olympia. Humanity's last hope is Jason and the Olympians.
Oh, man, cool. You got that pitch down. That's very exciting. Yeah, looking through this book, I've read through the first couple of parts, I guess. I don't know if you'd specifically call them issues, but definitely episodes, I guess, is what you call them. This seems very anime or manga inspired. Was there one or more things in particular you were calling on when you were coming up with this idea?
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, Jason and the Olympians is a comic for fans of Star Wars, Evangelion, old school Voltron, admittedly.
Oh,
all those huge.
That's the vibe I was getting.
Yeah. You mentioned the art. It's by, I believe, Matty of Monaco. I've only talked to him like this, so I'm probably butchering his name. But
beautiful
that guy, artist from Italy, he's done work with Aftershock. If you can imagine like a cartoony Sean Williams, I mean, he kills it.
Yeah,
and then the colorist, Maya Opasek, man, she's bringing the full Technicolor thunder boom. I mean, just making Maddie's art sing.
Yeah,
and so I should say my co-creator, Alex Ogle, fun fact about that guy, speaking of people who Marvel does want, he's got an alternate cover coming up for Spider-Man, The Amazing Spider-Man, number 75 this October. So,
oh, awesome.
Yeah, super pumped for that guy. And nice. Good fun book.
Yeah, I agree, man. I really love the art. It has some heart to it, which I really think helps the story. I think this is a real great mix. And, I was tearing through this, man. This is a great adventure. I can't wait for more.
Well, thank you, Pete. I like the way you think, brother.
but, he's a deal maker.
Yeah, I mean, comics, any genre of any kind, you know, we want to get it. It's admittedly a fun popcorn book, but nobody cares about that unless you hang all that stuff on emotional characters and bonds and just, you know, steep it in those things. So, I hope your fans and watchers and listeners will go to jacin.info. That's the Kickstarter site. You back the project. If you can't back it, I understand. Please like and share. You're going to have a roller coaster of a time. We promise.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's a great mashup of different genres that I think we're all fans of. And the art is really, for those of you just listening, like, it's so dynamic. Like, and it's something that a lot of comics don't quite nail. I feel like you guys do here with this.
Yeah, Mattia killed it, man. He's an Aftershock veteran artist, the series Knock 'Em Dead. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, oh, man, I would... describing the script, you know, like ship and hangar, and he would come back with just this intricate Mobius. Like, I was like, whoa, dude. But, you know, I can't thank him, Maya and Alex enough. They've really, whatever little pittance I gave them as writer, they took it and just elevated it into this huge blockbuster of a project. So, they are the wind.
I forgot that we have a whole section where you just sing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, multi-talented.
They are fantastic.
Can you talk about how you're breaking up the book a little bit? Because, again, the way that we read it, there's a couple of different episodes there. So in terms of the Kickstarter, what are people getting? Are they getting a first issue? Are they getting the whole graphic novel? What can they expect?
The entire graphic novel is done. So it's not a will you get it, won't you get it. Now, we are mentally coloring the very last chapter of 4, but that's just icing on the cake. So you will get a complete full story, original graphic novel with this this first Kickstarter. As how we're breaking it up, you know, comics are limited real estate. So if you can imagine like Alan Moore's the end of comics text, faux articles and stuff we have, just a world build, make it cool, flesh it out. We put in like a letter from Jason's deceased mother to her, an e-diary. There's a robot centauriton called Chiron, who in Greek mythology was trained the demigod heroes. But in our book, he's more a PR manager. So he has like a Dear Abby section where he gives the lowdown on Jason and all the rest of the Olympians. So just fun stuff like that.
That's cool.
Great.
That's awesome. And again, it's running for the next 19 days at this point. So if people are listening to the podcast later, when is the cutoff date for when they can pledge the Kickstarter?
It is September 12th. Okay. Please go again to jacin.info. It's short for Jacinta. Jason's heritage is mixed Portuguese and Japanese. So cool stuff there. Other things on the horizon, have projects with the awesome people at Scout Comics. Comic books kill. It takes the long hush-hush rumor that Golden Age Comics served as a front for the mafia. So Scout was the only publisher with the courage to publish this.
wow, it sounds risky.
Yeah, but it takes that rumor. So in other words, Golden Age Comics creator Jack Levi enters into a secret love affair with his Harlem socialite mistress of his mob boss benefactor, and places his life and career on the line. It's Jack and Stan meet the Sopranos.
Wow. So, yeah. That's cool. I love the idea of
these
people.
Pitches down, I want to mention.
Woo, Ric Flair, baby.
I love the idea that back in the day when like the comic scare, they were like, these mafiosos are staying up all night writing and drawing these superhero comics, and they're trying to make a 10 cents a piece on this. It's dirty money. Like, what's the conspiracy theory?
Well, the rumor is, you know, back in the roaring 20s, when the cheap Canadian printer trucks that would print the comics would bring booze over in secret. Probably well, true. Once prohibition is lifted, we just run with that, and it's instead of pulps, it's comics. Instead of
that's awesome.
Booze, it's H. So,
wow,
and it's great.
Heroes. H being heroin, not heroes, right? Okay, all right. I got.
I love how you use insider terms with us because you know how down heroin culture we are. You guys are real
gangsters when I see them.
Yeah, exactly.
We're in it.
We're gray gangsters. I run a small operation out of this lawnmower.
Shane, thank you so much for coming on the show. Good
great
luck with the project. You. Very excited and to see what happens with it. And fingers crossed that it all works out with the Kickstarter. That's awesome. And good luck with the other project, too. It was great seeing you.
Yeah, man. Thank you guys so much. Check out jacin.info. Check out Scout. And check out Macroverse. Got a project coming, the top secret service. James Bond meets Doctor Strange.
Wow.
All right.
You're a modern day Stan Lee.
Love it.
Shane, a catchphrase.
Should we give him a catchphrase? You want to?
Can we do Excelsior? We
just give that's taken.
That's the only one I got.
Okay. Anything else in that shack back there? You sure you can look around, see what else you got back there?
Oh, how about cornhole? How about cornhole?
Cornhole.
Oh, man. About that.
We'll workshop it. We'll have you on the next time after the Kickstarter is successful, and we'll workshop the phrase then, Shane.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you to your fans and watchers, guys.
All right.
Take care.
A good night.
Later.
All right. Once again, that is Shane Berryhill. The book is called Jason and the Olympians. It's on Kickstarter now until September 12th, as you mentioned. And
I have a follow-up question real quick before we jump in. Pete, you said you were pitching Marvel a bunch of stuff. Could you please elaborate on that?
Thank you for looping back to that.
What's that secret life you had?
Well, I don't know if you remember, but there was a time where, Alex was having stuff, you know, on Marvel, and you know, like you had comic book stuff going on. So yeah, I was trying.
Nice.
Wait, so are you comfortable talking about any of the pitches?
Yeah, exactly. Pitch us on what you were trying to pitch them.
Well, it was funny because back then we wanted to do a Hulk horror book. That was kind of our main pitch.
And now that's why you hate it. Because you never got to do it.
No,
it's not, jealousy.
I'll tell you what,
that's very, you know, it's amazing that you had that idea that became what happened. I mean, I'm sure it's a bit of a bummer, but that's awesome.
Yeah.
You're ahead of the curve.
You also had this idea about the X-Men living on two islands that fuck each other, right?
No, I never had that
idea. That's the real reason. Everything Pete hates, he secretly pitched before. like you're saying, X-Men, Wolverine.
Tall Wolverine.
He hates Justin, me, because he pitched me to Marvel.
Pitched you. That's right. He pitched you to your mom and dad, right?
That's right. Yeah, my parents are like, we want a beautiful daughter. And Pete was like, hey, Mr. and Mrs. Tyler, come here. Have you ever thought about having a weird, beardy son?
Huh? Classically trained, of course.
Classically trained, of course.
Classically trained.
Real quick, I know. One more thing. Just a shout out the comments. First off, Derek, I just stole his joke. Pete's pitch, Tall Wolverine, very funny. And then Eduardo, every time I feel like I know the basic narrative of Pete's life, he introduces a new wrinkle. And that's 100% true. We need an oral history of Pete's life from these podcasts where we learn about every bit of crazy nonsense that he's told us.
Yeah. Once every couple of months, you surprise us.
Keep it fresh, guys. You gotta keep it
you
fresh.
You got us again.
Yes.
When you were a whistle stop hobo for 6 months, riding across America on the train. Okay, Alex, you know what? Alex, I think it's time that we moved on to the next
one. Oh, is it? Okay. Oh, great. All right. Thanks, Justin. Really appreciate it. We're going to bring in our next two guests. Big fan of these guys, so I'm very excited to chat with them about their new Image Comics project, which is out tomorrow, called Echolands. They are W. Hayden Blackman and J.H. Williams III. Hello. How are you?
Welcome
to the show. Hello. Just to loop back to what we talked about earlier, Hayden, you are clean shaven.
Absolutely.
And JH, you have an amazing beard.
Amazing.
So we're covering all of our bases here.
I dream of that beard.
We have to compliment each other. So,
Well, let's talk about this project, or rather, people know you very well for your projects you've done before, but what spurred on this project that you're doing together with Image Comics? What was the initial? It seems like from the back matter in the book, this is something that has been percolating for a very long time at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Hayden and I met a long time ago at a San Diego convention. And it was kind of this cool situation because, like, at the time he was with the Lucas guys. And so all the Lucas guys had a dinner with some Image guys and some other comics guys. And we all kind of were geeking out on each other. And that's how we sort of first met. So, like, all the comics people were freaking out on the Lucas people, and the Lucas people were freaking out on the comics people. It was a fun time.
Classic.
And we sort of hit it off that way, mainly through Alex Sinclair, the colorist. And so Hayden, I don't know, something about, you know, Hayden and I just, we easily connected. And we ended up doing a Hellboy short story for Hellboy Weird Tales, where we decided to kind of work together on that. And we both enjoyed it a lot. So I ended up mentioning to him this weird thing that's been percolating in my head since I was a kid.
Wow.
And he thought it was awesome. And so it started there.
Man. Well, let's talk about the book in particular, Echolands, because it's a very unique world and it's a very unique hero as well. So I guess, continuing with you, JH, since it started with your idea, what was the initial idea? Was it this world that you came up with? Was the character and everything grew out of that? Or where did it start?
No, I mean, a lot of the world came out of conversations with, you know, Hayden. I had a loose concept of what the world could be and some of the characters that could populate it, particularly Hope. She was the main protagonist that lived in my head since I was a kid. And so those are the elements I kind of brought to Hayden, and then, you know, kind of really relied a lot on Hayden's world building aspect since he worked in video games. And that's such an important part of, you know, video games, that we felt like something could be, you know, built out of that. He loved the idea. So we just kind of started having conversation after conversation, seeing where things went.
Well, Hayden, over to you then in terms of the world building. So JH comes to you with this idea, given your background, where do you start building a world? Like, where is there a specific aspect that you begin with, or is it just throwing ideas on a page and then whittling them down until you come up with the right ones?
I mean, it's a little bit of both. We, you know, the first thing that Jim kind of had in his head was this image of hope. And he kind of pitched to me this idea of hope and the fact that she steals a gem from kind of a wizard. And we knew even as soon as I think the word wizard left his mouth, he's like, but you know, I don't want it to be a traditional wizard. We need to find a way to make it feel, you know, kind of different and turn the kind of cliche on its ear. But the notion that she kind of stole this gem from this wizard and was on the run was the kind of starting point for it. But then as we started talking about other characters and other characters that Jim had in his head, you know, Core, I think, was one of the very first ones we started talking about. It was this kind of big biker hun, you know, that you meet in the first issue. There's another character that we introduce in the second issue named, or we reference in the second issue, and you meet, I think, in the third, named Romulus. And as those characters kind of started to formulate, then I think we knew that we needed a world that they could populate. And in order to make them all fit, we had to kind of come up with the hook, which we're, you know, we don't want to talk about too much. We don't want to reveal anything. It's kind of the, sure. You know, but something that would make it all kind of mesh together. But then for me, it was really about, you know, once we knew kind of who the central characters were in the plot, then it became, okay, you know, what is all the questions you kind of ask yourself whenever you're trying to flesh out an environment, right? You know, what is the level of technology and what does religion look like? And, you know, what are the kind of social strata? What does that look like? And as you've seen, it's kind of the genre mashup, right? So really early on, the answer was like, well, it's all of it. You know, there's religion. Well, whatever ones we want, we'll throw in there and, you know, kind of run with them, right? Whatever, you know, kind of social constructs or politics, those types of things. We can almost put anything into it. But we did frame it in, you know, this again. There's a scaffolding that kind of holds it all together, and we don't want to give away yet, but, and that kind of dictated almost every decision we made from that point forward.
Well, I wanted to ask you about, go ahead, Justin.
Sorry. Yeah. Just one quick question. I feel like you guys are comic maximalists. Like the way your work looks, it's just like, it's so there's so much composition, and I'm always like, how do you guys approach that? Is that something that it's like, well, you start with that idea, or do you sort of walk up to it a little bit?
Well, I mean, I don't know. It's kind of an organic process, really. You know, like Hayden was saying, some of these characters lived in our heads for a bit, and some of them were built upon things that were ideas at the very beginning, but kind of transformed themselves as we moved along. And as we talked about those characters, that kind of informs a little bit how you want to approach the visual presentation. For me, all my projects I've been involved with involve some sort of visual experimentation, and I didn't want this one to be any different than that, you know, but how I want to explore ways to experiment in ways that were different than what I'd done before. So one of the things we first early on adopted was the idea of doing it landscape.
Yeah.
We talked about that pretty early on. Without really understanding what that meant as a challenge.
Yeah.
I think, you know, Hayden and I very quickly discovered, particularly as I start drawing, how much it affects the writing process and how scenes are constructed. And it's been a fascinating learning experience, kind of giving ourselves that challenge. But the end result is that Hayden and I have come up with something that, as you read it, doesn't feel like any other comic. And that was really what we wanted to have, is what can we do with this that made it stand out from other comics, particularly important because it is a genre mashup. there are these familiar elements that people can relate to from being fans of whatever. But the way we present it sort of is from a fresh set of eyes, I guess you could say. And
it feels like almost like film strip, or like it's rare to enjoy a comic close to your face and also far away from it. And yeah. I feel like that's something that like, no, it's amazing to be able to sort of conceive of that as you're making this together.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if we set out for it to feel like, you know, film strips. The thing that comes to my mind when I look at it reminds me of old adventure comic strips in some ways, even though that some of the layouts get kind of fancy. but the flow, that right to left flow, that kind of widescreen effect that some old adventure strips might have, kind of reminds me of that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I just want to say artistically, your guys' books really kind of like stand out on the shelves. I think what Justin is talking about a little bit there. I'm just so impressed. It to me, it just feels like people who have worked in this industry for a while and know comics well enough to know like, okay, we're throwing these rules out the window and we're really going to try to do stuff that'll make this stand out. And as someone who reads, it's so refreshing to read these books because it really hits you differently. You kind of, it's not the normal pacing. You've got to kind of like let your eyes adjust the page a little bit. What is your guys's, like, for readers, just awesome to kind of like see and to experience, but what's your guys's favorite parts of the process?
Oh, that's a loaded question. I'll let you go first on that one.
Aiden. All of it, right? The flip questions, all of it. It's, but then it's all my least favorite too. So,
I think for me, the best part,
well, it's all just hard, right? You know, I mean, when you're digging into it, it's, you know, writing can be hard. So, but I think for me, it's always exciting at the very beginning, right? When we sit down to talk about a new issue, because everything's possible, right? And you're not, you know, it's what are we going to try and cram into this issue? It was always a very exciting conversation, but I think even more than that is when, once we have the first kind of draft of the script and Jim and I are going back and forth and kind of, you know, talking about different scenes and sometimes debating directions that we want ahead and talking about specific lines of dialogue, that's the most exciting to me because it's the collaborative process just kind of really coming together. And then it kind of, for me, because I'm, you know, I'm not an artist, I'm not the artist, right, on the book, it kind of goes dark for a little bit and as Jim works on it. And then I get, you know, kind of the first pages back, and that is maybe the most exciting moment for me because you're seeing it all kind of come to life and seeing what we had in our heads kind of, you know, showing up on the page and then being able to do kind of a final dialogue pass based on some of that stuff when you already have something to work with is incredibly gratifying. So, I mean, it's all fun and exciting and just seeing where, I mean, you guys know, like Jim, I think is doing his best work and we push boundaries on Batwoman, I felt like, but seeing some of the stuff that is being done in every issue here. And one of the reasons, I think I told you this, one of our first calls or first conversations when we talked to him, that the thing that blew me away about Jim's work on Promethea was the way that he handled panel design and how it wasn't just, you know, the layout wasn't just a stock layout unless that's really what the scene needed. And I think we tried to push that really, you know, further in Batwoman, and we did some interesting stuff there. And then we're doing it again here. So even that, even like sometimes I don't even look at, I get lost in the panel design and the way the page is laid out. And that's very exciting too, just to see how it can differ from issue to issue. At the same time, and this is again, a benefit and a challenge. I don't know if everybody knows this, but Jim, like I always get called the structure guy. Cause I like, you know, I do like structure and I like knowing where we're going to start and where we're going to end. But Jim is incredibly rigid sometimes about like, we're going to always start this way. And we're always going to end like with that woman. We always started with what those three panels, right? And we always ended with the three and it started black and white and went to color. And I forget those things that Jim, because it's in his head, adheres to that stuff. And we're doing similar stuff here. So with Echoland. So I think it's this nice kind of combination of these kind of themes that will carry through and this structure that will carry through, but then also it's very organic in places. And we're doing stuff each issue that is surprising and different from the previous issue, which keeps it really fresh.
It's so funny to be like, well, the artist is always the freewheeling person here. Like, no, he actually is the rigid one. He's the one that dictated.
Well, to be fair to Jim, just in those kind of like we, you know, those handful of incidents, right? Which is good. Right? It keeps us honest, right? We always want to start, like every issue begins with, if you saw from this first issue, with kind of this more freeform, full page, you know, shot of you know, a character. And again, without giving away too much, revealing a little bit about an event that's happening that kind of is the backdrop for the whole story. And as that kind of unfolds, you'll see that issue to issue, and then we kind of bleed into the issue itself. But having that and knowing that that's an anchor that we can always go back to, and it's like, well, because it's hard sometimes to just start, right? But knowing, well, at least we know how the issue is going to start every time. It's always going to start with this one big page and some narration from Hope's point of view talking about one of our characters in this event that's going on. It's really helpful because it allows us to kind of jump.
Yeah, I love that stuff. It feels rigid, but it actually gives the reader something to be like, this is what it is. It's like what we hold on to as we read these books. Like, oh yeah, we do this. It helps us. It's another form of just the story itself, I feel like.
Yeah, for me, that's, you know, having a certain set of rules for the opening and ending of each issue, to me, is sort of like, it's like an episode of a television show, maybe, or you definitely know, okay, we're now starting a new chapter because the image has done this and it ends here. We know that's the end of a chapter. I always kind of feel like that sort of having that kind of set of rules helps for the design flow. So you know what you got to do and where you're going to end up. It's one of the things I've always been very strict about with scripts from, you know, myself and Hayden, or with scripts from other writers, is I need a whole script from the beginning to the end if I'm going to do what I do. I know how it ends to inform how I begin.
What a demand. You see the whole script?
It's important, you know.
Of course.
But in terms of like backtracking a little bit, one of the things that excites me is, even though Hayden and I very early on came up with this very, very solid outline of what we were going to do from beginning, from A to Z, we knew how this thing was going to function. As we started writing and drawing the issues, what's excited me is certain things jumping out at us that we hadn't considered. So certain characters taking a more prominent role, as an example, than we had originally considered. As an example, in issue 2, we were introduced to some additional cast members that originally we had no place for. We kind of said, oh, we need to do something with these certain characters that we didn't plan for. And the result
is... we were going to kill a bunch of them off.
What's that?
We were going to kill a bunch of them off.
Yeah, well, we do, but we kind of said, no, some of them need to survive. But what that does is open up a whole new set of parameters for the story. Because what do you do with these new characters? And the story is actually better for it, for making that on-the-fly decision. Because it wasn't a decision that deviates the end goal. It doesn't, like, change the outcome of where we're going, but it makes getting to that outcome more rich. That's been super exciting for me, on how some of those things jumping out at us that we hadn't originally anticipated. So we've got a lot of that we've kind of come up with along the way. So, you know, whenever you come up with a new idea that you hadn't planned for, it kind of sparks another idea and how to explore that while fitting it into the structure that we've set up without, you know, losing ourselves from the original structure.
You're kind of talking about this anyway in different aspects, but does story trump structure, or vice versa, or does it vary from time to time and page to page?
Oh, I don't know if it trumps. It can be helpful. I don't think there's a you can trump. You have to basically know your rules, but know them in a way that you know how to break them and for it to make sense. Would you agree with that, Hayden?
Yeah, I mean, structure's there to help, right? And parameters are sometimes good, right? I mean, I'm in game development, and we say this all the time. It's a cliche, right? That, you know, being in a box at the beginning is sometimes good because it forces you to be creative within those limitations. But in this case, you know, this, whether it's the structure of an issue or the structure story itself, you know, to me, it's a guideline and it's an aid. It can help you when you get lost. And like I said, it, you know, having that, knowing how we're going to start every issue from a layout standpoint is really helpful because it allows us to dive right in and kind of get our, you know, kind of creative juices going. So from that standpoint, it's great. But if we ever come up with an idea that, you know, breaks the structure, or we, you know, we want to take a detour here and not, you know, slow down the rising action or some other, you know, key kind of plot point, we'll do that because it feels like it's right for the characters in the story. And as Jim said, like, you know, the characters surprise you sometimes, and they take the story in different ways. And I think, you know, it's funny. I map a lot of the stuff I do out in like Excel, so like a spreadsheet, just because it's easy to look at. Sure. You know, it's easy to look at, and it's easy to sort, and you know, you can put page counts in and things like that, right? But again, it's just a guide, and I think that, you know, I haven't looked at that Excel sheet in a while because I know how far we've already diverged, and it's the right thing for the story. So it was a good way to start, and it was good to have those kind of guardrails early on, but you got to bust out of them when the story tells you you got to go a different direction, or the character says, I got to go over here instead of over there.
I'm so curious, like, your Excel spreadsheet, is that for the macro story or like an internal to an issue story?
No, well, it was both. So it started out going like kind of issue by issue. We know how many, I mean, you have limitations in comics right away, right? You know how many pages you have, right? You can only fit so many panels on a page, although I think I keep trying to break that. To break the laws.
Careful what you say.
But there's only so much you can fit on a page, and you can only do, you know, I always joke, like, there's no budget in comics in the sense that, like, you know, you can go from a desert planet to an ice planet to a jungle planet all in one page if you want to. You could never do that in games.
Your artist might have action.
Live action, it's very expensive to travel.
Right, you can never do that in games. You can never do that in live action. So from that standpoint, it's really liberating. But there is a budget in comics in the sense that there's a certain number of pages, a certain number of panels. And you can't do exposition, lots of dialogue, and lots of action, and big establishing shots all in the same time, right? So, but yeah, so the Excel spreadsheet was basically like, first it was each issue, and like, here's the synopsis, here's how many pages we're going to devote to it. And then it was literally breaking down each scene, mostly so we could figure out how many pages we wanted to devote to each and make sure we were kind of moving fast enough. But again, it's like after I think the second or third issue, we're like, oh yeah, I'll go back to it at some point, but we're already, you know, ahead in some areas and behind in other areas just because the story in different directions.
Hearing you describe that document is very stressful to me personally.
Yeah.
Well, in terms of page count, we even kind of screw ourselves up there a little bit because issue 3, we were like, no, we can't do this in 24 pages. We need 26. So because we added certain information that wasn't originally there, and we're like, no, this scene has to be here, but we can't do it in 24 pages. We have to have 26 pages. So we kind of even, you know, mess ourselves up in that regard a little bit. But what's cool about doing a title with Image Comics, we can do that. There's no one telling us we can't. We can do whatever we want. So.
Nice. I have a very dumb question for you, and I only ask this because we only read the book digitally, and I'm very excited to physically pick it up tomorrow. What does it look like? Because, and the reason I ask is because, like, I opened up this PDF, and normally we open up the PDFs, it's like, okay, scroll through it, and, you know, you could just sort of...
It's shaped like this.
Okay.
Oh!
So it is wide.
Okay, it's more wide.
But this is Jim's brilliance, though, right? So... The logo is designed to sit in the corner. I don't know if you can see this, but it sits in the corner. So you can put it on the shelf, and against kind of hard cardstock too. So you can put it on a shelf and display it, like, you know, alongside all the other comics. You don't have to take up kind of two slots with it. Wow. But once you get it, then you open it, you know, that way.
Right? Oh, okay.
You so bastard. You beat the system again.
So vertically, it's about the same size as a regular comic book, but you read it horizontally.
Correct.
Yeah, it's exactly the same size vertically. I mean, it's the exact same dimensions.
Well, let me ask you a follow-up question then, because particularly based on the page that we're looking at right now.
What is paper?
what are comics? Just real quick, I'm new to the
show. We just get emails.
Yeah, people are like, they want to talk to you, and I'm like, I don't know. We had a juice guy on the other day, and I was like, I don't know what juice is. I'm just babbling now. Anyway, so we're looking at this page right now. Given that you have the fold in the middle there, how does that affect your process? Like, we have a guy who's punching across two pages. Is that frustrating to you that you have the fold there? Do you compensate for that? How do you hit it art-wise?
You always have to take the fold into consideration when dealing with a spread. And you have to, so like this guy's in the center of the book, but if you notice the core construction of where he sits, he won't be interfered with what he's doing. Right. So the storytelling, no matter what, will remain clear. And so that fold shouldn't bother you too much when you get to it. We're hoping like when we do the collected edition that we can do some sort of production tricks to mitigate any gutter loss for that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Particularly like if we get to do a hardcover, you know, if we do it sewn binding, it opens up way flat. So it reads really smooth. Since I've been experimenting with double page spreads for such a long time, that was one of the things I learned very quickly. You know, because I've made the classic mistake that I've seen, you know, some other people make from time to time where you put too much information in that divide. And stuff gets lost that you didn't want to get lost. So it's always a trick for sure on, you know, understanding what's going to be there and what can I accept to be there and what can't be there.
We got a question here on Crowdcast for you guys. This is from Michael Vinoy 79. What are the deal with the raw cut editions of Echolands?
Okay, the raw cut editions essentially are this idea that we came up with based on a conversation with Eric Stevenson. He was looking for something that we could do that was unique with Echolands, that, you know, any ideas we could think of that would make it kind of extra special beyond what it is already. And I had mentioned to him in that conversation that when we did Sandman Overture, we did these things called Sandman Overture, the Special Edition. So each issue chapter of Sandman Overture had an extra issue where we printed the artwork as it looked from leaving my studio. Wow. So if I did something that I colored myself, either painted or digitally colored, that was actually printed in that version without any other colors involved. And then the lettering was put on translucently so you could still read it, but see kind of the artwork through those bits and pieces. Wow. So I mentioned that to him and he's like, then that's what we do for this. Let's do that for this. And I'm like, are you sure? Because this is going to be a longer running series than Sandman Overture. And he's like, well, you know, let's give it a shot and let's see what we can do. And so it kind of gives people, particularly comic aficionados who are interested in process on what things look like sort of midway through. Yeah. It kind of gives them a little taste of that. Yeah. It's fun. Hopefully people dig it.
I wanted to get back to something you mentioned way back at the beginning of the interview. You were talking about not really saying what the hook is, what the twist is necessarily the end. How do you, I mean, I know you're doing it right now, but how do you sell a book like this without laying out the core concept? And I'll mention that we've had this discussion a lot on the show. And we've heard a lot of different answers from a lot of different people in different directions. So I'm just curious to get your take on it.
Yeah, that was a big question that Hayden and I had to figure out. Is like, what do we do to promote this book without giving away what the secret of the Echolands is, right? Mm-hmm. But it was important to do that because once people see what we're doing, once we make that reveal, it changes everything you understand about what you've been reading. And so there was no way we could just reveal that out of the gate. And so we had to rely on all the key elements to promote the book, you know, the characters and the wild visual settings and the genre mashup and the bigger story to be told, regardless of what the secret is. All that stuff still applies and is dynamic and exciting, whether you know what the secret is or not. So.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it goes back kind of the world building question too. We want to build a world that, you know, can support endless stories, but if you don't care about the characters that you meet in the first story, you're not, you know, who cares about the world, right?
Exactly.
So that, you know, we want hopefully readers are invested in Hope and in her crew and in, you know, their kind of flight from the wizard, and that pulls them in. And then when they, you know, find out kind of the history of the world and kind of, you know, the reason why everything is the way it is, it's kind of icing on the cake, but they're already invested in the characters themselves.
Yeah. And hopefully it rewards for people that want to go back and reread it, because then they'll go, oh, yeah, there's little things here and there all along the way that kind of like, it's right there. You know? So, yeah.
I did want to ask you guys, just, I know you left Batwoman and it was not the absolute best experience. Obviously, you're on this now, but is that a world you'd ever want to return to, Marvel, DC, or anything like that? Or are you just all in on Echolands right now?
For me, I mean, I wouldn't. It's kind of a double-edged sword, really. I mean, I love doing that kind of stuff, you know, the DC stuff and the Marvel stuff, you know. It's always fun to work on those characters because you love them. You're fans of those characters, and you see what other people do with them, and you're like, "Oh, that'd be so cool to do this or that," you know. And I ended up doing that Batman Black and White thing last year for kind of that reason, but more that was more about because the editor involved asked me to do it, and it was somebody I admired, and so I said yes to that. You know, as far as going back to something like Batwoman, I don't know if we could. I think if we really, really had our minds put to it, I'm sure Hayden and I would do some crazy cool stuff with it. I just don't know. I just don't know if all the stuff in between from where we left to where things are now, if we could find gratification in doing it, if that makes sense. Yeah, it wasn't a good time when we were forced to leave. But you know, what can you do? As far as going back to doing corporate comics in general, I mean, you never know. I mean, weird stuff happens all the time, but I know for me, and Hayden probably feels similarly, if we can make something like Echolands work, why should we go back?
Mm-hmm. Right.
This is ours. This is,
yeah,
let's create our own things that can have their own shelf life and hopefully go beyond us. You know what I mean?
It's fun to play covers, but it's also fun to release your own album.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and it really does feel like we've been talking around, this is a natural extension of what you guys were doing on Batwoman, but even bigger and wilder, and there's more ideas on every page. It feels like it's like we've been talking around, really expanding on that, both visually and in terms of the storytelling, and creating something new. So it's very cool to see. So the first issue comes out tomorrow. It sounds like you have a big, long plan for this book at this point.
I define long.
However you define long, probably. I guess.
As long as your beard, a beard length.
We know, I mean, the story, Echolands is the series, and then this story we call Hope's Crucible. And Hope's Crucible has a beginning, a middle, and an end, you know, and kind of we know where it's headed, and we know where it ends. But that's not the end. What's that?
We just don't know when.
Yeah, we don't know when, right? We don't know how much of that other stuff's going to creep in as we go head towards the ending of this, right?
That's more than you think.
I always feel very weird about asking this question. I feel like this is a very typical comics question. It's like, hey, congrats on the first issue. When are you finishing?
but the world itself and even the direction that we're headed with the story is, you know, allows us to tell more stories. Like I said, you know, we wanted to create a world that supports endless stories. So I don't think, you know, even if we were to wrap Hope's Crucible up tomorrow, which we're not, but the Echolands can continue on well beyond that. It would, you know, a number of other stories and other characters and, you know, other plots. So
essentially it could be endless. I mean, because of the setting that all this takes place in, that's one of the things we were so excited about at the beginning of developing this is we could see that potential right away in the concept about the endless possibilities. We could tell any kind of story about any kind of character in there. And that just, when you have it being so open and broad like that, you know, it could be endless. So, you know, right now we're telling the story about hope and the discovery of the truths about this world, but what does it mean beyond that? It's wide open.
Yeah. Cool. Well, it's an awesome book. I'm very excited, even though I think I read it through twice already digitally. I'm going to go to the comic book store and pick it up because I really do want to see that physical
copy.
Gotta
hold on to it.
So cool. Yeah, definitely.
Congrats, you guys. Very excited to read the rest of it, however long it runs. And we'll hopefully have you back on soon. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Great to talk to you guys. So good.
Bye.
There.
All right. There we go. Wow. Once again, that is J.H. Williams III and W. Hayden Blackman. Image Comics Echolands is out
tomorrow. Pretty damn cool.
So cool. Such a good book. Like I said, legitimately, I cannot wait to pick it up physically and just pour through every page because it's
I can't wait to talk about it in the stack.
I love, Alex, that you had a real moment there where you're like, why do I ask this question about
this man? We do it with TV as well because like I cover TV for my day job and it's like the same thing. Where it's, really love the first couple of episodes of your series. How many seasons are you going to do?
Yeah.
When is it ending?
Because I'll tell you what, the real answer, Alex, is fuck you, man. As much as they will pay us to keep doing
it. I know.
Yeah. But also, it was a real Jesus take the wheel moment for you, Alex. Just really let it go.
It was funny, Justin. It's in my head every time Alex talks to me. My first thing is fuck you. You know what I mean? And then
Did you call me John just now?
It was weird. I was sort of feeling Pete energy for a minute.
Yes. Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to feel all of your energy as we move to the next section of our show, which is my conversation. Your audience questions. Woo! And for audience questions, we are going to you, the audience, to ask questions of us, the hosts of the show. And you can do that one of two ways. You can either go on YouTube and drop something in the comments. I'll keep an eye out for that. Or in Ask a Question over here on Crowncast. And we'll get to those in a moment. I see a couple of those coming in already. But
please
first,
start each question with fuck you, Alex. And then can I ask you?
No, that is not a way to talk to people, Pete.
No, not very sure nice. This.
Not very nice. So definitely drop your questions there. We would love to get to them. We would love to talk about anything geeky or otherwise. But before we do, we should talk about what you're drinking tonight. Now, first, we should mention the official drink of this evening is, this is hard to explain, but Brett Macris, our resident chef.
Yeah, straight bullies.
I guess given up on doing the Gotham City Cocktails cookbook and has moved on to a very weird coloring cookbook for drinks.
How dare you say
it's for adult children. It's adult superhero children, right? Based cocktails that you can also color in the picture of.
And so and I think he found this just based on the image. The only thing we could tell from any of them, so there was Captain Marvel, there's Black Panther, there was Deadpool drink, there was a Spider-Man drink that I believe, I could see the word peel, so I believe it was a drink with banana peels in it, is what we established. Delicious?
Yeah, we established that.
But Captain Marvel won, and Captain Marvel's drink was a Manhattan. Like, that was it.
That's all right. What's wrong with that?
I love a Manhattan. Don't get me wrong. I was just surprised. I thought there was going to be like a Carol Danvers flair to it or something.
Oh, it was a Negroni, says Stray Bullet.
Yeah.
Oh, it was Negroni?
Yeah. We're way off.
In your face.
No. No, it was a Manhattan.
Spider-Man. The Spider-Man. I got you.
No, the Spider-Man was a Negroni with a banana peel in it. And the Captain Marvel was a just straight up Manhattan.
What is happening?
Anyway, my vermouth went bad, so I did not make a Manhattan today. So I apologize about that. But do you know what today is, guys? Do you know what special day today
Tuesday.
Is? No, man. Today is PSL day. It's pumpkin spice latte today. So, of course, I had to pick up some pumpkin from Southern Tier to drink it. It is fall.
Here, sorry. I have to leave the stream for the rest of the show. It is, first off, it is not fall. It is in no way fall.
It's summer, bro.
I'm sweating through my hat right now, which is the thing that happens in fall, right?
Sweating through your hat? Are you all right, dude? I thought there's something wrong with your body.
It's very hot down here. I have to turn off the AC because it's too loud for our podcast. And it's just I'm sitting in a basement and it's very hot.
Pumpkin stuff is something I don't like. So
the one good one, you honestly should try it because it's on shelves now, is this Southern Tier pumpkin.
It's on shelves. I mean, are you fucking getting a cut of this or something?
Southern Tier pumpkin now in stores.
I love on shelves. That's a selling point. Yeah. It's on shelves.
Which I'll tell you what, talking about selling things, thanks for the prop, Pete. We should move on before we get to the rest of the drinks and talk about this week's sponsor, right?
But you're cutting off what you're drinking in the middle to do the sponsor?
All right, we'll come back to the sponsor. Justin, go ahead.
I had a Montauk Wave Chaser. Believe me, I love a Manhattan. I have all the stuff up there. But I have been out on the town two nights in a row. My man John Gabris was in town, and we had a full double baby, back-to-back babysitter two night.
Nice.
It was a real, we were celebrating. It was very fun. It was expensive, I will tell you that. So I'm just sipping on a little bit of beer, though I will be about to open another Narragansett.
That last one was sketchy, but you survived. That's good.
I survived, and this one was also in the cooler right next to the one I drank last week.
Speaking of coolers, I'm drinking what's left over in my cooler from the bocce tournament this weekend. A little something.
Yes. Pete, becoming an old man before our eyes.
Yeah, I appreciate the fact that you're having a Lagunitas, though. That's a step up from the usual poison you have. But you know what doesn't poison mine. You? When you use the Manscaped, our sponsor for this group. I don't know. I'm having trouble with transitions. Do you know who's also having trouble with transitions? Me. Attention listeners across the galaxy, all the way from Australia to Houston. Do we have a pube problem? If so, our friends at Manscaped have cleared you for takeoff with their fourth generation and brand new Lawnmower 4.0. Kick your pubes to the next planet with the Performance Package 4.0. The orbits in your pelts will feel like you're in zero gravity when you use the best tools for the job. From the leaders in male grooming, join the 2 million men worldwide and Pete who trust Manscaped, and get your rocket ready for takeoff by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus 3 free shipping with the code FANSIDED20.
Justin, you're gonna find so many things inside this package. You got the Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer. 4.0, that's like they've worked on this thing. Yeah. The Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, Crop Preserver ball deodorant, Crop Reviver toner, Performance boxer briefs, and a travel bag to hold that entire amount, the number of appliances I just named. is so many, and you get a bag to hold
good
it.
Good improv, Justin.
No, that's written here in the script.
Oh, okay.
The script that we're reading. Yeah. You got the Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer. It guides you on a journey to trim your body from all of the hair that we're talking about. This is a fourth generation trimmer, features cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents. Pete, we're talking about you, the grooming accident we keep talking about, but never saying.
Yes.
We'll never say what happened.
We'll never specifically say what happened to you, but it happened. Yeah. And then you got the Lawnmower 4.0 and whatever it was grew back.
Wow. Oh, I guess maybe it's a different accident than what I was talking about.
Oh, okay. Oh, you were thinking of something else?
Yeah, something a little more extreme. Okay. Oh, Pete's eyes closed. The Lawnmower 4.0 has a 7,000 RPM motor and a new multifunction on-off switch.
Don't forget about the light. You got a light on there.
That's the best part.
Yeah, it has a 4,000K LED spotlight. It's very cool. It also includes the Weed Whacker, which is great. That goes right up your nose. You just put it all the way up there like a COVID test.
What? No, Pete, wow, nice selling point. I like Pete. You're the guy at a concert shouting "Free Bird," but instead it's about a 4,000K LED spotlight on.
Drum solo.
Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at Manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at Manscaped.com. Your balls will thank you, and Pete will thank you too. So there you go.
There you go.
All right.
One of my balls, I call Pete.
Yes, let's move over to a question here over on YouTube. Nelson Martinez says, really enjoying watching Stargirl and Riverdale and also your podcast on both. Which show would be more fun to watch if the cast members were swapped? And who would switch with who? Mikey with Hiram, etc.? Mikey being the real Hiram? Villain of Stargirl, of course.
Oh, man. Yeah, wow.
I mean, Mikey is sort of a junior Hiram.
I kind of like Mikey as Archie. I feel like that would work.
Of course you do. I mean, honestly, Pete, don't you actually want to watch that show? You want to watch the Stargirl cast in Riverdale?
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Pete loves
Amy Smart subbing in for Mage and Amick. You feel good about that?
Yeah, but it's what would be wrong?
It feels like your two loves or something.
Let me a little shorthand, Alex. Anytime you say Amy Smart, Pete's going to be like, I like it.
Yeah.
Who would I hesitate to ask who Luke Wilson would sub in for because we know who it is and it's a sad answer.
Yeah.
Oh man.
It is a sad answer. Oh,
that's fucked up.
Rest in peace, Harry.
Alex, which show would you prefer with the cast?
So it's Stargirl cast goes to Riverdale or Riverdale cast goes to Stargirl. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like I'd probably get more mileage out of Riverdale cast going to Stargirl because it would be much more nonsense. So I'd have a lot more fun watching it. Like the Stargirl cast could do Riverdale, but I don't think the Riverdale cast could do Stargirl.
Ooh, interesting. How dare you?
See,
Betty could be Stargirl all day.
I think the cast from Riverdale could pull off Stargirl. Cast of Stargirl, like you'd have Luke Wilson over there just mumbling around, like who knows what he's saying. The evil Nordic parents.
That would fit right in.
Yeah, they should just multiverse.
They would live in the walls of houses.
Totally. Yeah. Hang out with Penelope. Yeah. Just have a scene with them. That would be great.
Great.
Great, great question.
Yeah, very good question. Really like a good cast swap. Let's move to another question here. This is from Stray Bullet. I realize that we'll probably talk about it during Week in Geek, your Patreon exclusive podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. But I'd love to
read it.
He wrote that down. But
he writes our Manscaped ad.
Yes. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on the No Way Home trailer, and I really want to know how Pete feels about it feeling loosely based on One More Day. Second part of my question, what if that's not Doctor Strange, but Mephisto as Doctor Strange, and the reason his home is frozen is because hell has literally frozen over.
Whoa. Wow, big question.
So, yeah. Point of nerd clarification, first off, that I just want to throw out there. This is very dumb, but it is not One More Day. I saw people tweeting that. People kept being like, oh man, they're just straight up adapting One More Day, or this is an adaptation of One More Day. It's not an adaptation of One More Day. One More Day is the story where Aunt May gets shot and Spider-Man travels around the Marvel Universe and everybody's like, oh, no way we could heal a shot old lady. That's not a thing that we could do. Winter Soldier's like, yeah, I got the cybernetic arm, but it doesn't translate to old ladies. I'm sorry about that. So Aunt May is super sick. He runs out of options. He does go to Doctor Strange. He goes to Iron Man. He goes to Mr. Fantastic. He goes to everybody else. And at the end of the day, Mephisto comes up and is like, hey, actually, I can heal your Aunt May, but in exchange, I want something from you. I want your marriage to Mary Jane. I want to take something that makes you happy away from you. And so eventually, Mary Jane kind of makes the decision for him because Peter will never make the decision. You get a blip, and then you end up in Brand New Day. And when Brand New Day starts, nobody knows Peter Parker's identity, which is a thing that happened in the Civil War. You don't know how. And we didn't know how for, I think, a couple of years down the road until Joe Quesada and I think it was Javier Pulido did the art for it, did a story called 1 Minute in Time, which went back and showed what happened leading up to Brand New Day. But it still wasn't Mephisto. What happened in that was because of this alternate history that happened, MJ ended up getting shot. MJ, because she's much younger, could be healed by Doctor Strange. went to Doctor Strange, is like, yeah, no problem. What I'm also going to do is, I believe, working with Mr. Fantastic and Iron Man, and they wiped the internet and whatever else. They made it so that nobody could remember that Spider-Man was Peter Parker until they told them. And that's that storyline. So it's actually 1 minute in time is the long explanation there. But I've seen that mistake online a lot, which is fine. It's not a big deal.
I mean, it's got essences of it.
Sure. Doctor Strange is in it. Spider-Man is in it.
That's it. Don't you think it's going to be Spider-Man has to go into the multiverse to save?
Of course.
That's what's happening.
But that's the fun of it. Once he goes in, then we're going to get all these villains and, you know, that's all the fun.
Is he going to go into the multiverse or is the multiverse going to come to him is the question. The other thing that I just want to say about this while I'm continuing to be like totally annoying about this trailer is.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so. I'm aware. But is that Marvel has never, in 24 movies and several TV series at this point, straight up adapted a storyline. Yeah. Like, they've used a tiny bit here and there, but they've very much like got in their own direction. So who knows if somebody's going to get shot? Who knows if that's the reason? That doesn't even seem to be the reason from the trailer. He's just, like, getting mobbed, and it's frustrating because his life is ruined, and he's being held for questioning in the murder of Mysterio. So I don't know. It's, again, we've only seen, like, a tiny bit of the movie from the trailer, but it seems
to me... That is how trailers work.
Yes, yep. It seems to me, like, they break the multiverse, some stuff from the multiverse comes into the MCU versus vice versa, and then things go wild from there.
I don't know. I want to say from the train scene where they're on one train and all these other trains unfold, it looks like they're going into the multiverse because we'll have all the trains appearing.
No, that's the G train. That's how that works.
Oh,
yeah. Have you ridden the G train? Pete, you don't live in New York, so you wouldn't get it. But like the G train is.
Yeah. What do you have in Philadelphia? Like horse and buggy or something? Or how do you get around?
Dude, we have adorable little trolleys. So back the fuck up.
Oh, okay. That does sound very cute, actually.
Very cute. Real Rice-A-Roni situation.
It's fucking badass, man. Riding a trolley. Woo-hoo!
Wait, no one's throwing around the word badass when it comes to trolley transportation.
I just did.
You like what did you, little bell?
Justin, what did you... We haven't even talked about, like, what did you think of the trailer?
Yeah, we haven't even talked about it.
I like the drips we're getting, and Marvel's just very good at being, like... They give you enough to sort of, for all of us, and like you're saying, Alex, complaining about, enough for us to hang ourselves in... develop these conversations about what storylines it's based on, when in fact it's not going to be based on any of these. It's going to be something completely new that pushes through all this, because they're telling a macro story. So they can't just be like, here it is. It's the story that you loved 1 minute in time or hated more likely. It's got to be something that fits in a piece and also develops all this other stuff. So that's why I think he's going to go into the multiverse to either help the fam or to escape the badness that he's having in his life, and then they come back after him or something. It's like he's going to make a mistake, and it will then cost him, make his life even worse back in New York. So, but I'm excited for it.
Yeah. Pete, what about you? What was your take on the trailer?
I'm a little worried about this movie just based off of the last one. There's a lot of great moments.
You didn't like the last one?
The last one, I was a little, you know, because we know Mysterio is bad. It was a lot of downtime for people who know what's up. And we had to watch somebody bumble with the cat. I've said this all before. Anyways.
I felt the same way. I just want to agree with you, Pete. I felt the same way watching that movie, because it's like, Spider-Man's shooting webs. We know he does that. Get to some interesting stuff.
That's not at all.
Come on,
what I'm saying. You
is he
going to
lay some spider baby eggs or something new?
Speaking
this is
of
the same
something...
thing we've done before. He's putting on the costume. He's hanging out with MJ.
Something that
hasn't eaten any flies.
So we have this multiverse, but there's also something in Spider-Man lore.
Where are his compound eyes?
Also, something in Spider-Man lore that kind of is similar to this, where we kind of get the all-knowing spider lady and the different web choices that he can make in life.
Madam Spider.
Madam Web.
It's fine. You guys haven't read comics, so.
Anyways.
Yeah, don't give me that. Madam Web is one of those characters. Like, I don't know. She sits in her room and is like on the phone all day.
Absolutely. She's blind and she's like, well, I heard something about spiders.
She's Gwen Stefani in the video of Spiderwebs.
Yeah.
Telephones.
I did think that this looked like fun. Dr. Strange looked hilarious, rocking like a kind of like a winter coat and then having like sweat bottoms, even with a cape on. So that looked fun. Looks like he's going through a tough time like a lot of us. So it'll be interesting to see. what's all happening, but I think they did a good job of getting everybody excited. Everybody's got an opinion or ideas on it, so it's pretty exciting.
As usual, I'm going to caveat this with, of course I'm going to see it, and I will probably see it multiple times and I will enjoy it, but my big concern watching this trailer is my same concern going into the trailer, is I worry that there's too much to know getting into this. Like, even beyond the fact that you have to have seen the previous two Tom Holland movies to understand what's going on there, and you need to know who Doctor Strange is, and you need to understand Avengers Endgame and everything in the MCU, if they are bringing in all of these people from the Tobey Maguire movies and the Andrew Garfield movies, that's a barrier for people. Whether, and I trust, we've talked about this incessantly, like, I trust that they will do it in a way where it's like, audiences, here's the information you actually need to know to enjoy this movie, because that's what Marvel is very good at. Marvel Studios is really good at that, but there is still that mental block from people where they're like, what's going on here? Am I supposed to know this? And us will be watching it and be like, yes, they literally just told you all you need to know to understand it. They'll be like, well, this is too confusing for me.
I guess you want to see the Spider-Man origin. You want to find out how he got his powers.
How did he get his powers? What happened?
A running joke the whole fucking movie.
Well, but that's what I'm saying. Alex, it's funny because we have...
Was he born out of a spider baby egg, or what happened from like another Spider-Man?
We have talked so much about how we want our comic book movies to move past the origin stories where you don't have to recap, that we don't need to see the pearls drop. We don't need to see the spider very carefully sliding down a thread.
Is that how it happens?
I'm not going to spoil it. Okay. But I do think they have gotten so good at very coolly getting into the story and giving us the information we need. Because when you think about it, you don't need a ton of context. You don't need to be like, this is from the other iteration of the Spider-Man universe where Andrew Garfield was Spider-Man and this was the villain. You could just be like, this guy's a villain. And here's another guy who looks just like him who's also the villain from this universe. And it's weird that there are two of them.
Except that the stinger of the trailer is Alfred Molina showing up as Doc Ock and saying, hello, Peter. If you've never seen those movies, what does that mean to you?
It means there's a scary guy with glasses there and he knows who Peter is.
We also know who Peter is, and you also have glasses, Pete.
And let me say, scary.
Yeah.
Oh, come on, man.
Come on.
Again, this is all through the lens of I'm excited. I got excited when I saw Alfred.
That's what I'm saying. What are you talking about?
I'm gaming it out, man. I'm gaming it out. I'm trying to think about the regular people.
Because here's the other thing what I'm saying. This is a big... They set this challenge in front of themselves. They were like, we're going to introduce... Like, they had no... No one was like, we demand to see Alfred Molina. Like, no one was like, please bring
come
back...
Come on, he was great.
Of course he was great, but no one is like, let's cross the continuity so we could get that Doc Ock in this universe. No one was like, please do that. They put this challenge in front of themselves, so I think they want to up the ante, and they want to be like, let's scoop all this stuff up, because this movie, it may be the teaching movie about what a multiverse is and how it works for the whole next iteration of the MCU. That's what I think it is. And so I think they are going to be walking us into a lot of information, and the best way to do that in a smart, like it's actually sort of smart maybe, is to go back through Spider-Man's movies and be like, look, this is a different Spider-Man. This is a different universe. Mm-hmm. Here's a villain that you'll recognize because you're a Spider-Man fan. You've probably seen the other movies. So I think this may be a way for them to sort of slow play us into what a multiverse is. And it might actually work better than trying to do it in just a chatty way where you don't have concrete examples to use.
Or they're thinking, you know what we need is we need to get that amazing Matt Murdock from Netflix over into, you know, the Marvel movie verse so that we're ready for She-Hulk for that to come out. So how are we going to do that? Okay, we got to do a multiverse of madness.
What if, so there's all these rumors about Charlie Cox showing up as Daredevil, right? What if big surprise is Spider-Man's lawyer is actually Iron Fist, and it's Finn Jones, and he shows up, and he's like, I'm a lawyer.
I was really hoping you were going to say Foggy Nelson, because that would be better. Oh,
God, the people are dying to see the Foggies from the different multiverse.
Did you see the extended cut of the trailer? They didn't reveal Charlie Cox, but for some reason, they're like, hey, Foggy Nelson died.
Oh, come on, dude. not cool.
It was weird. It was out of nowhere.
Don't put that out there.
A paper dropped into frame, and the headline read something else. And then on the very last page of the paper, in very tiny type, they were like,
what are they going to do?
It was one of those interactive.
Foggy's already playing happy. How are they going to do that?
They're going to be like some random lawyer's friend.
No, we have to back it up. Those are two different people. Oh, are you talking about for the Ben Affleck movie?
Yeah, I'm talking about John Favreau.
Oh, your original Foggy Nelson?
Wait, that's right. Are you saying you like the Foggy. Favreau? You're the Favreau Foggy?
I'm a Favreau fan.
Yeah, oh, we know God. That.
That's crazy.
Pete, you don't make any sense.
Anyway, great movie. Very excited to check it out. Let's move on to the next question. This is from Kevin. Following up the discussion of effects of a change from vertical to horizontal page orientation, what are some of your favorite comics that broke away from the usual format, and how did they change up the comic's form?
Well, we would say that Batman one where when yes. That was insane. Yeah.
Just and also, while
talk about
we're
something
doing,
we say all the time.
Yeah. We do say that all the time. And while we're doing easy answers, I think also Batwoman, just because we had J.H. and
but that's
on the
true.
Show.
And it is what a mark that left on DC and just all readers and stuff. They tried to replicate that in Batwoman for sure with other artists and other books. Couldn't do it. That's that's how special those guys are. That they really just they created a style that no one else could do. And the book Echolands is a perfect example of how they're pushing the borders on that.
Yeah. So I mean, pretty much everything that Marcos Martin and Javier Pulido do pretty much across
Great
the
answer.
Board, every one
Great
of their
answer.
Issues. Yeah. Also, I don't know. Yeah, I think this fills it. X-Men Grand Design as well.
That's a good
one.
Call. And that's almost not even in a visual format, but just the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, but it's also these really like tight panels across the board as well. And we were arguing about this a lot on the Patreon Slack today, but Tom King's books also, he really, really tries to play around with his artists with the visual format on stuff. I think Strange Adventures is a great example of that. Just flipping between Mitch Gerard and Evan Doc Shader. It's real good.
I have a sort of a softball of an answer, but Saga, the way that every issue would start and end, really that made me aware of using something subtle that makes that just draws you in immediately and then leaves you with a cliffhanger and a smart one. Yeah. Trillium by Jeff Lemire, says Derek Mainhart. Another good answer.
Yeah.
The Hawkeye books were really good at that, too.
Oh, yeah. That's a great answer. The Lucky the Pizza Dog issue.
Yeah, oh, come on.
The best. I can't wait, and I'm also very nervous to see how they do that on TV. It'll be very interesting.
Yeah.
Eduardo, this is our last question here, says, any favorite Shang-Chi comics storylines that you recommend ahead of the upcoming movie? I'll tell you what. No. And I mean, part of the reason I feel comfortable saying that is the filmmakers, and I feel like we've talked about this on the podcast before, have even said that because there was a lot of very racist depictions of Shang-Chi and his villains, I think Fu Manchu was in it and other characters at certain points, that they felt very comfortable being like, let's take the basics.
Nope.
His dad is a supervillain. He has left. He is told to come back. That's what we got. Let's kind of start from there and sort of work from there. And I think that's such a smart way of doing it.
The new book that they just put out was pretty amazing.
That's what I was going to say. The new book I actually really liked, and I think we all did. Maybe it's second or third issue is coming out soon. Mm-hmm.
Is this Shang-Chi versus the Marvel Universe?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that is super fun. And I think they've specifically designed that to target people that are going to see the movie. We do have one more actually at YouTube that just came in. This is from Lion Man. Were you guys into Chaos Comics back in the day? Whatever happened to Chaos Comics? Anyway, Ernie would make an awesome movie.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
I didn't read a lot of that, a lot of those Chaos Comics, but the design, there were so many ads. I feel like every Wizard issue had multiple Evil Ernie ads in it. So it's very iconic. It sits in my memory, but I never read them.
Yeah. Pete, you sound like you were an Evil Ernie fan.
Yeah, Evil Ernie was fun. You know, that it was Chaos Comics were a great kind of like over the top time of as far as like what they were kind of doing and how kind of over the top it was. So it was kind of like fun for me. I don't have any information on what happened to them or whatever. But
Lady Death was the other big character there. That I feel like we did read some of those for the show.
Yeah. But when we had Jesse on, he was doing like a bunch of like cool Evil Ernie stuff.
Jesse Blaze Snyder.
Yeah. The Mohawk.
Or when we had Jesse Jackson on.
No, it was Jesse Blaze. You always get those two Jesse's confused. Yes.
They both rebooted Evil Ernie, though. That was the
thing. That's a tough thing,
Great. Thank you for your questions. We're going to move on with our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
Oh, boy. I got to do stuff. All right, this is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free in the form of a Midtown Comics online gift card. Zelbin, do we have a pre-selected?
We do not have a pre-selected guest this time. I'll just remind everybody, we've had a couple of people that have bailed on it. It was pretty rude. So I'm gonna drop.
People have plans.
Once again, the link in the chat here. If you would like to sign up for an upcoming date, please do. We would love to have you on. And you are guaranteed to walk away with $25.
Anyone on YouTube or Crowdcast, just put first hand up or I would like to participate or...
Yeah, anybody who would like to do it.
Or fuck you, Alex. You know, whatever things we say on this show. You know, just to put out there to... get a fun volunteer for this and they will win guaranteed $25.
Anybody? Nobody, I guess.
I'm putting the guarantee on you. You're guaranteed to win. There's no way.
Yeah, he's gonna pull out the easy questions that he never asks.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, do we have I'm working, Pete, at Sport Your Bro, but I'm ineligible. Now Shane's eligible. Oh, hand up. We got straight bullet.
Yeah, straight bullies.
There we go.
Straight bullet. How many men ads
is like when you listen to the podcast? Is this a fun section of the show?
Yeah.
Great question.
Hey, Brett, hello.
I'm in the middle of cooking dinner.
Oh, no. Is this guy ever not cooking? That's my question.
That's really good.
That's a dumb question.
All right. Here we go.
Yeah.
Living the life.
Very Absolutely. Cool.
Is it raining in your living room?
Oh, by the way, you know, I try to keep it real. I try to keep it fun. Right. You know, I try to keep the cocktails every week fun.
Oh, my gosh. You're doing a great job.
Calling me out for doing something cool. Try to keep it fun for everybody. Oh, I guess you abandoned the cocktails.
Yeah. Try working with this guy forever.
I
eats at your soul, man.
I had a whole
you
bottle
do
of
all
vermouth.
This work, and then he just shits
I smelled out. It. I smelled it in a god sour, and I was like,
Alex, okay. I feel like you did not need to pour out this bottle of vermouth.
It was gross.
I mean, it probably was gross.
Yeah. I've had it for like 6 or 7 months at this point. Yeah. It was
sorry, gross. I'm walking around. I was in
the And I'm the only person in my family who has vermouth. I keep offering vermouth to my 11-year-old and my 7-year-old, and they won't have it.
Put it on their cereal.
Look at that.
Oh, yeah, so nice. Look at that. It's fun.
Who wrote that?
I have no idea, but do you want to get them on the next show. Week?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
There's no author.
Oh, perfect.
That's how you can tell you've got a good book when nobody wants to put their name on it.
Yeah.
All right.
This is great.
So
trivia?
Today's trivia is on topical comic news and a small nod to the legend Sonny Chiba. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Okay, here we go. Question number one. In November... who is coming back to New York City in the new Hawkeye book? Is it A, Kate Bishop, B, Stay Hiccup, or is it C, Zachary Ty Bryan? So it's either A, which is the only one that makes sense, or you could be completely wrong.
I'll pick A.
A is correct. Well done, sir.
This guy's a pro.
Speaking of November,
I've done this before.
Marvel's Voices Heritage number one spotlights indigenous characters and blank. Is it A, caretakers, B, creators, or is it C, Brian T? So is it A, which is incorrect, or you can pick B, creators? Yeah.
Woo. Yeah.
Super looking forward to that. Here we go. Last one. What DC comic is teasing the return of a long-lost DC character? Is it A, Laura Dean keeps breaking up with me, B, The Infinite Frontier, or is it C, Bow Wow? It's either B, which is the only one that makes sense. There you go. $25 yours.
All right. Congratulations. Cool. You have won $25 at Midtown Comics.
Thank you.
We will get that right off to you, and I apologize about the cocktails. I swear I will drink a cocktail next
week. So I am going to design. I am going to design a cocktail for Nat Townsend called the Gut Punch. I'm going to design a cocktail for him. I'm going to design it. It's going to be called the Gut Punch.
That's very funny. If Pete can't punch him in person, he might as well punch him through a cocktail.
Is it going to have boiled baseball gloves in it?
Instead of ice cubes.
Baseball glove.
All right. Oh, I love it. I'm very excited about this. I'll tell you what, in case anybody hasn't listened to this podcast before, you decided to drink called the Pete Palmer. a fancied up version of Pete's Arnold Palmer with vodka. I have had that several times, like having nothing to do with the show.
I actually had one this afternoon. Oh my gosh.
It's so refreshing and good. It's so a good. Really good drink.
And the only one that hasn't had it is Pete.
Ironically, classic. So.
Classic. That's great. Brett, good seeing you. Thanks for coming on. Congrats on the gift card, Brett. We'll check
you
soon.
Love Thank you, man.
Bye. All right. Yeah. There we go.
Now, I just wanted to quickly say yes, it was the Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift, in case you were wondering.
The tribute to Sonny Chiba.
Yep.
His most well-known movie. Thank you for calling that out, Pete. Really appreciate it. We are going to plug some comics because comics come on out all the time and we love comics. What are you looking forward to, Pete?
Well, I'll tell you, before we even had our guests on, I wrote down Echolands number one because of the panels alone. The art and the designs of the panels are just so amazing and breathtaking so different. We read comics all the time. This is such a treat to open up and explore. I was just so impressed with this book, and I can't wait to talk about it more.
Justin, what about you?
I mean, you know, we have our things that we say in this time, and I'm going to say one of them here. I got to give it up for Ice Cream Man number 25.
Yes.
Oh. I mean, like, I feel like I haven't, it feels like it's been longer than a month since the last one, and this one really hit home on all of the Ice Cream Man fronts. I mean, it will when I read it tomorrow, probably, because I'm looking forward to this great, great comic that is dark as hell.
I'm looking forward to Amazing Fantasy number 2 from Marvel. This is from Kare Andrews, and the first issue was very weird, very wild.
Yes.
With Spider-Man, Black Widow, and Captain America dying and ended up in some sort of transitory heaven straight out of a 50s or 60s sci-fi fantasy novel per the title. So very curious about the second issue, and those are all titles that we're going to talk about in the Stack podcast. Yes, Pete.
Also, Once in Future number 19, which is...
You love a good grandma. Good night, grandma.
Love it. That's one of your... Hey, I love a good grandma.
Yeah. All of those are going to be in our Stack podcast that comes out Wednesday at 9 a.m., both in the Comic Book Club feed and in its own dedicated Stack feed. And folks, that is it for this week's show. Couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Shane Berryhill for being on the show.
Yeah, Shane.
Check out Jason and the Olympians on Kickstarter until September 12th. Also, J.H. Williams III and W. Hayden Blackman. Image Comics and Echolands is out tomorrow.
Honor.
It's a can't miss. It's so good. Next week on the show, we're going to have Trung Lee Nguyen is going to be here to talk about the magic fish. And also, Eric Powell is going to be here. From Lagoon and Hillary and many other things. So that should be an exciting chat. A couple of other things I want to plug. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast, is going through What If every Wednesday, so you can check that out. Riverdale After Dark, our Riverdale podcast, also every Wednesday, so you can check that out. Star Guys, our Stargirl podcast, goes up Tuesday night, so we got to rush off and tape tonight's episode, you guys.
Oh, yes, we do.
Absolutely.
We have to go do that right now.
Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support the show. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe and listen. At Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Don't talk over the ending credit cards.
I just want to see the spider eggs, Pete. I just want to see him lay some spider eggs. That's it.
Everybody, good luck out there. I hope you're
right out of his butt. Spider eggs out of his butt.